Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Today on Inside Politics, show me the money. New fundraising numbers are out, and Joe Biden is dominating Donald Trump in the race for campaign cash as the former president asked his voters to cough up donations for the $500 million he needs by Monday. His pitch, quote, keep your filthy hands off Trump Tower. Plus, the perks of pardon power. We have new reporting this hour about how more than a dozen people pardoned by Donald Trump are now helping his push to get back in the White House. Stay tuned for our exclusive story. And Benjamin Netanyahu may be heading to Washington. Speaker Mike Johnson says he'll make the invitation official hours after the Israeli prime minister spoke privately with House Republicans. Netanyahu tells the U.S. to stay out of his country's politics, so why does he seem to be wading into America's? I'm Dana Bash. Let's go behind the headlines and inside politics. First up, in a race between the oldest presidential candidates ever, it's all about keeping up. And Joe Biden hopes his campaign schedule sends a message to voters that he has the strength and the stamina to spend four more years as president. He's been to eight states since Super Tuesday, including the six biggest battlegrounds. Donald Trump has campaigned in just two states, Georgia and Ohio, perhaps in an effort to keep costs low as he struggles to keep pace in the money race. CNN's Elena Treen is covering this story. Elena, what are your sources inside Trump world telling you about his anemic campaign schedule?
Right. Well, there's a reason that Joe Biden is out there far more frequently than Donald Trump, and why Trump is choosing to stay off the trail since securing the Republican nomination. And that's largely because Donald Trump needs to raise money. We know that over the past a few weeks, ever since Donald Trump secured the Republican presidential nomination, he's been hosting fundraisers, attending fundraisers at his Mar-a-Lago home, as well as being meeting with donors and trying to court donors to help him with the campaign's money problem. And I'm just going to read for you, Dan, and walk you through some of the numbers that we got from the latest FEC filing. So in February, the Biden campaign raised $21.3 million, and they entered March with $71 million cash on hand. That's compared to the Trump campaign having brought in $10.9 million and $33.5 million, having that as cash on hand. And so Donald Trump is very much trailing Joe Biden significantly in the money game. Now, part of that, of course, is that Joe Biden is the incumbent. He has been the incumbent, and he hasn't had to fend off primary challengers the way that Donald Trump has. And when I talk to the Trump campaign, they tell me that they are hopeful. His numbers this month or in February were better than the money that he raised in January. And they do believe that now that he is officially the Republican nominee and does not have any other primary challengers, that they can continue to raise money. But again, I mean, they are having to preserve resources, cut costs, do what they can to try and save money to help his campaign keep up with Joe Biden's.
There's the help his campaign keep up with Joe Biden and help Donald Trump, the man, keep up with his legal fees. And they are very much intertwined right now since the RNC is allowing the money that's flowing in to go for his attorneys for all of these fronts that he's fighting on in the courts.
Yeah, the legal issues and the amount of money, his legal expenses are massive. And it's not just the legal expenses that he's already been paying, that he's going to have to pay as his trials, you know, he has one trial date, he's looking ahead to many other trials, but it's also the judgments and this bond judgment and everything that's going on with the $454 million judgment that he has to pay by Monday is just part of it. There's a lot of money that is needing to be siphoned away from what would originally be going to his campaign to these legal costs. And here's some of the latest that we learned about Save America, Donald Trump's leadership PAC, I should say. They spent nearly $5.6 million on legal bills in February, and that far exceeded that spending, the PAC's total receipts. And so really an issue there. I mean, we saw that Save America spend more than $55 million last year because of Donald Trump's mounting legal bills. So this is definitely another key concern for the former president and his team. Dana?
Wow, that really, in a pretty stunning way, summed up the issues, one of the major issues that he's facing when it comes to money. Thank you so much for that reporting, Elena. Let's talk more about this and so much more with CNN's Gloria Borger, Jeff Zeleny, and Priscilla Alvarez. Hello, everybody. Jeff, let me just start with you. You've been on the campaign trail a lot, obviously talking to voters and talking to campaign operatives. What is your sense about why it has been hard for Donald Trump, the real deal, about why it's been hard for him and the Republican Party to raise the money that they need to raise?
Look, I mean, a lot of it is what Elena laid out there. I mean, he has used a lot of the money. The RNC over the years before he was a candidate again spent a lot of money on legal fees. Some donors are, quite frankly, wary of contributing to his legal fund where they, you know, would prefer the money go elsewhere. Some of it is the fact that his operation is not nearly robust and a traditional as other campaigns have been. But I think the biggest thing is he's like feeding two mouths here. He's a criminal defendant, which is very expensive in multiple jurisdictions. One would be expensive, and never mind all the jurisdictions, and he's running for president. So, as you said, they are linked in some respects. He's linked them. I mean, that's why he jumped in so early in the first place, but that's the biggest reason. But I think at the end of the day, I mean, the money is coming back. He's having meeting with the fundraisers. Any Republicans who kind of rolled their eyes and didn't really want him to be the nominee, they're on board, basically. They've opened up their checkbooks. So I'm not sure if it's the money as much as, you know, what they're doing with it. And deep questions with the RNC, because they, you know, said they wouldn't spend money on legal fees. But that was the old RNC. This is his RNC, and they're going to.
Yeah, Laura Trump has said they should.
Yeah.
She said it publicly, so.
Yeah, and Henry Barber, who's a national committeeman with a famous Republican name, he tried to, at the last Republican meeting, to put forward a resolution saying that the party wouldn't pay.
And it failed.
And it failed. And it failed. And I just, as you, I bring you in here, Gloria, I just want to put back on the screen what we saw from Elena about the Biden cash situation versus the Trump cash situation as it stands right now. So you see it, how much more Biden has raised and how much more he has on hand. I mean, double.
Yeah. Look, part of it, as Jeff was saying, is the power of incumbency. But he's hosting a lot of big fundraisers.
Biden
is. He's out there doing that while Donald Trump is having lunch with people at Mar-a-Lago trying to raise some money for his legal issues and his campaign. And so, you know, Biden is out there doing the fundraising he's got to do, and it shows.
And I should say, the fundraising has been a bright spot for the Biden campaign. Month after month, they've seen an increase in their fundraising numbers, and they always point to the grassroots donations, too. That's their counterargument to the polls that we're seeing and the low approval ratings that the president has, is that every month they've also broken records when it comes to those donations that are less than $200. In fact, that made up the majority of some of this fundraising for them. And so this, yes, the president is on the road. He was at a fundraiser yesterday. Mark Cuban was at that fundraiser in Texas. So he is getting the attention and the money, but they also are trying to point to the enthusiasm, or what they say is the enthusiasm, with the grassroots.
I want to go back to one of the things that we mentioned as we opened the show, which is some great new reporting from Isaac DeVere and Kristen Holmes and Jeff Zeleny about the pace of Joe Biden's campaign schedule. I'll just read an excerpt from your great reporting. Joe Biden has been to every top battleground state but one since Super Tuesday primaries. He's also been on unannounced calls pushing negotiators toward a Gaza ceasefire. Donald Trump has held one rally in a battleground state in those 2.5 weeks and shifted another to Ohio in part to save costs. He has also played in two golf tournaments at his Palm Beach Golf Club, among other activities at his club.
Boy, I mean, the last 2 weeks have been very stark. Donald Trump has been doing interviews on television, but he's not been in the battleground states. He's not been to Wisconsin, a key battleground state, since 2022.
And we have the map
up. Republicans there are wondering where he is. So what this is going to tell us at the end of November is if traditional campaigning still matters. We don't know that. It doesn't matter in the way that it did, but it matters to a big degree for local news coverage and other things. And if this was the reverse, if President Biden had only been to one state and Donald Trump had been to 10 states, basically, there would be a five-alarm fire. Is he up to the task? So I think we should be judicious in sort of, you know, treating these the same. So that's why it's important to point this out. Yeah. So, but President Biden has a burden here to show that he is up to the task.
Right.
And this first sort of lap around battleground states, he's almost done. He hits North Carolina next week. That's the final visit to him, is to bring Democrats back on board to show that, yeah, I want to be out here. I'm energetic. I can still do this.
And that's the key. And that's the key. This isn't 4 years ago when the rap on him was, oh, you're just in the basement. And that was a different rap. This is they understand full well in Wilmington that this is something that he has to prove.
Well, and there are fractures within the Democratic Party, to your point. And so getting him out there to talk and engage with the voters is important. I was talking to Latino organizers who met with him and the vice president in Nevada. And for that, Latinos are split, even among their own families. Some are leaning toward Republicans, some are leaning toward Democrats. And so for them, it's important to have that conversation directly with the president to talk about these issues.
Okay,
but he's like the Energizer Bunny these days. I mean, he's just got pep in his step, and he's showing it on purpose. And Donald Trump is out winning golf tournaments, I gather, and raising money. It's a really stark contrast. And don't forget, Donald Trump also did this during the primaries. I mean, he wasn't out there.
That's a good point.
Meeting with voters at town halls, answering questions. He did a rally. He shook some hands, and he flew back. You know,
but that has kind of been his MO from the jump. He's not. I mean, not that he hasn't done retail campaigning. He's Mr. You know, big rally, entertain the folks, and then leave. I just want to get to some new reporting that you have, Priscilla, which is a brand new digital ad from the Biden campaign that we're showing here for the first time, and the question is going to sound familiar to all of us, especially you and me, Gloria. The question about, are you better off than you were 4 years ago?
And then I see the disinfectant. And is there a way we can do something like that by injection? We're doing, I think, really, really well.
I'll tell you what.
How? 1,000 Americans are dying a day.
They are dying. That's true. And it is what it is.
I mean, Donald Trump just kind of put it on a platter for the Biden campaign.
This is the classic example of two candidates sparring in real time, and they are going for it. They've done it on other issues like January 6th and the border, and this is yet another one where they are answering the question of, are you better 4 years ago? And this is something that President Biden teased himself at a fundraiser last night. He used this, and less than 24 hours later, we're seeing that ad. You know, it's tricky because I think in talking to voters, they think of the Trump administration as 2019. They sort of forget the 2020 aspect
of it. Which is why they're putting this ad out.
Which is why they're doing this ad to remind them of what happened and what the former president's response was to
it. There's no doubt, I mean, on unemployment, the markets, other things are better. But inflation is higher, so it's a bit of a mixed bag. But, I mean, this, of course, goes back to 1980, the final question that Ronald Reagan asked Jimmy Carter in the debate in Cleveland. Are you better off than you were 4 years ago? So that's why the history of this is important. But we'll see how long they continue this, because it's a mixed bag in terms of how people feel about the economy.
Yeah, you know, I mean, the irony of this is, of course, that Donald Trump could take credit for the vaccine, which was so important.
Yeah, don't expect that anytime.
But he's not going to do it because half his base is against it.
We're going to take a quick break. Up next, repaying a favor. Brand new CNN reporting about some of the wealthy and powerful men who Donald Trump pardoned before leaving office. They're now helping him get back to the White House.
This podcast is supported by Sleep Number. Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores? Sleep Number does that. Only Sleep Number smart beds let you each choose your ideal comfort and support. Your Sleep Number setting. Sleep Number smart beds learn how you sleep and provide personalized insights to help you sleep better. All Sleep Number smart beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. Temperature balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
The Assignment with me, Audie Cornish. There's been a ton of writing about the album Cowboy Carter since it dropped this spring. But what grabbed my attention is a new documentary on CNN called Call Me Country, Beyoncé and Nashville's Renaissance. Lots of artists have tried to boot scoot their way onto country music charts. Why did this album cause such a stir? And what about both this pop star and this political moment has caused all this conversation? Listen to The Assignment with me, Audie Cornish, on your favorite podcast app.
Now a reminder of that old adage, there's no such thing as a free lunch. CNN has new reporting that the Trump campaign is getting a boost from multiple people the former president pardoned before leaving the White House. CNN's Steve Contorno is following this story. Steve, what have you learned?
Well, Dana, earlier this week we found out that Paul Manafort is in line for a potential role at the Republican National Convention. He, of course, is Trump's former campaign manager who served prison time for tax evasion and who Trump pardoned in his final days in office. Well, it turns out Manafort is not alone. There are more than a dozen individuals whose sentences Trump commuted or who Trump pardoned who are now somehow engaged in helping Trump get back to the White House. This list includes some of his closest long-term advisors, individuals like Roger Stone, Steve Bannon, Michael Flynn, his former national security advisor. All these individuals continue to go around the country, not in a paid role for the campaign, but in an informal role, sort of boosting the former president and certainly selling some of the election lies around the 2020 election. And then you have other individuals who are helping raise money for the campaign or donating to the political committees that are supporting him. That includes Charles Kushner. He is, the father of his son-in-law, Jared Kushner. Charles Kushner made a $1 million contribution to MAGA Inc. That is one of the super PACs supporting Trump's campaign, one of the largest single donations to that super PAC. And then you have individuals who are more celebrities, and they're using their large following support Trump. That includes Kodak Black, the rapper whose Trump sentence Trump commuted his sentence. And then there's one other individual I want to mention, that's John Tate. He is someone who is a longtime political operative. He worked on the Ron Paul campaign, was later convicted of bribery or convicted in a bribery scheme related to his work on that campaign. He is now advising Trump's campaign as a consultant, and he has made more than $70,000 in that role so far.
Incredible reporting. Of course, you can see more of it on CNN.com. And Steve, before I let you go, you spoke to a clemency expert who called this situation a perfect storm. Meaning what?
Well, there's just so many highly unusual circumstances here. You have the fact that we have this former president who has been nominated by his party to run for his former job. That itself is remarkable. But you also have the way that Trump treated the pardoning process that was ahistorical as well. There are all these people who were celebrities and former advisors, supporters, donors, people close to his political operation and his administration who he pardoned, most of them in their final days. And there's also this sort of interesting dynamic I want to mention as well, where you have these individuals who may very well be spending this election cycle serving a federal sentence. They are now free because of Trump, and they are helping Trump get back to the White House, Dana.
Steve, wow. Again, terrific reporting. Thank you so much. Gloria, you spent a lot of time in the 4 years of the Trump White House covering a lot of the back and forth with some of these individuals who Steve is reporting.
Paul Manafort.
Are back in the mix.
Yeah. Well, Paul Manafort, I mean, I remember he ran the convention for Donald Trump. It was very important. And then it was discovered that he was talking to the Russians, right? Giving them campaign information,
and
poll
then he got
information.
A pardon.
And then, of course, he got a pardon. Look, this is a nice way to say thank you for a lot of these people. I mean, what more could Donald Trump have done for them than pardon them and get them out of jail? And I think Paul Manafort would jump at the chance to become relevant again in this way.
Yeah, and then the question is, if he does win, how active will people like that be in the administration of Donald Trump?
Be very active.
That's getting way out ahead of ourselves. But we do want to switch gears to something that Trump is doing right now, which is he's scrambling. He only has 4 days left to find nearly $500 million to post bond in his civil fraud case. If not, the state of New York could begin seizing his assets. Trump is fundraising off of that possibility, sending a text to supporters yesterday reading, "Keep your filthy hands off Trump Tower." So what he is doing, and I just want to be clear, he's not asking his supporters to pay his bond. He's asking his supporters to give money to his campaign, which also contributes to legal fees.
Exactly. And you can double dip in a sense, because, I mean, there is a limit for contributing to a political campaign. There's not the same limit for a legal defense fund.
And if I may, he's also, I mean, this is what he does. And
right.
Everybody in politics does this now. He's trying to rile up his potential right. donors sure. to get angry to send money.
And one thing that is clear that we've seen really for now more than a year is whenever he is in legal trouble, it has helped him politically.
Yes.
So imagine this scenario. I heard one of our legal experts saying on our air this morning that, you know, the visual of Trump Tower being padlocked or something and, you know, them seizing property. Imagine how that would help the former president politically. Imagine how those images would sort of build onto this. So even though legally and financially it's not good for him, we do not necessarily know that politically this is not good for him in the moment. It's just one more a part of what a lot of voters see as a pylon effect for him. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this drumbeat to the Monday deadline also keeps Trump consuming all the oxygen in this race.
Yeah, that's right. And that is such an important note of caution, because every single time, I can't think of one example right now, I'm sure there is, where sort of the conventional thinking in a conventional campaign about a conventional politician was,
from the
mugshot
to
hurt
other
him.
Things.
Yeah,
boom, 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 down
yeah. And it's, I mean, going even back to when he was trashing John McCain, didn't hurt him. Catherine Rempel wrote an op-ed in the Washington Post about this, saying, "He," meaning Trump, "treats every bill, every signed contract as merely an opening offer. Imagine you lend Trump a few million dollars and then he gets elected president again. It would become virtually impossible to collect. If you did try to collect, Trump would likely have a few qualms about sicking the Justice or Treasury Department on you."
This is the difficult and delicate thing for the White House and for the Biden campaign, right? Because they can't, we just played that ad. They responded very quickly to COVID. They're staying very far away from all of this because they don't want to play into the narrative of big bad government mm-hmm. and the government's getting involved and they're the DOJ is working for Biden. So all of that makes this very sensitive for the White House and for the Biden campaign to weigh in on, which even though the narrative exists and is out there and the former president uses it to his advantage. I mean, I think the immediately the mugshot came to mind when with all of this that's going on with the bond, because it was something he was using to his political advantage.
And then there is the question we talked a little bit about on the show yesterday with Bill Cohan. How is he going to do this? And one of the options is for him to file personal bankruptcy. Part of our colleague Caitlin Collins' reporting was that that is not something he wants to do. I mean, talk about a personal blow. She said he has privately expressed opposition to any path concerning filing for bankruptcy, and it remains the least likely for now.
Well, he's filed for bankruptcy before. He's been bankrupt in the 90s, if you'll recall. And that wasn't a great time for him. And I think he doesn't want it to happen again, because don't forget, he ran on the fact, and we've run clips, that I'm very rich, mm-hmm. I've got a lot of money. He testified in a deposition, he had about $400 million in cash on hand, which we haven't seen. And so I think there's a real reluctance here, because his whole aura mm-hmm. is I'm this rich guy. And when he was declared bankruptcy the first time, you know, he was monitored by banks. He had things taken away. I mean, I recall in doing some reporting on this that they asked, you know, how much did Marla's engagement ring cost? So I don't think he wants to go through that again.
Yeah. And that's very, very true. And that was all before right. he was a candidate.
Yeah.
Or a former president wanting to be president again. To
exactly.
be Thank you all very much. Up next, Benjamin Netanyahu wants American politicians to stay out of Israeli politics. He may not be practicing what he preaches. And later, the bracketologist in chief. Say that three times fast. We'll ask a tournament pro to break down President Biden's March Madness picks. House Speaker Mike Johnson says he will invite Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to address Congress.
I would love to have him come and address a joint session of Congress. We'll certainly extend that invitation. He invited me, and I've been invited to speak at the Knesset there. I would think I would be the third U.S. speaker in history to do that. It'd be a great honor of mine.
This comes less than a week after Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, a longtime advocate for Israel, blasted Netanyahu in a Senate floor speech and called for new elections in Israel when the war there winds down. I want to bring my panel back on this one. You know, it is noteworthy for several reasons. One of those is what Prime Minister Netanyahu said to me on Sunday, which is to American politicians, notably Chuck Schumer, stay out of it. Let's listen.
I think what he said is totally inappropriate. It's inappropriate for to go to a sister democracy and try to replace the elected leadership there. That's something that Israel, the Israeli public, does on its own. And we're not a banana republic. This is a wake-up call to Senator Schumer. The majority of Israelis support the policies of my government. It's not a fringe government. It represents the policies supported by the majority of the people. If Senator Schumer opposes these policies, he's not opposing me. He's opposing the people of Israel.
Which Senator Schumer is not opposing the people of Israel. He makes that very clear. And also, not to totally conflate these two things, Prime Minister Netanyahu, it's hard to imagine he's going to come here and call for some election change in U.S. Politics. Having said that, you have a brand new statement from Senator Schumer about the possibility of Netanyahu coming here.
Look, he leaves the door open through a spokesperson. Our Hill team is reporting that he said, I will always welcome the opportunity for the Prime Minister of Israel to speak to Congress in a bipartisan way. Those are the key points there, a bipartisan way. Mm-hmm. So Speaker Mike Johnson controls half of the Capitol. The other half, of course, is controlled by the Democratic Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer. So for any joint address, there has to be a joint invitation. Of course, they could go and just have him speak to the House. That's possible. That would create an interesting situation. Would Senate Republicans go? So we will see if this actually ever happens. I mean, the Prime Minister is very well aware of the politics here. This is just the beginning of him sort of trying to put the thumb on the scale of politics here sort of criticized Schumer in your interview.
If I were Netanyahu, I would say, show me the money. I mean, you know, he wants money and he hasn't gotten it yet. And it would be a little awkward to address the Congress if he hasn't gotten the money that he's asking for to fight the war.
Yeah, and I'm just getting a text from a progressive lawmaker who says Netanyahu should not be undermining his strongest ally in the world by entertaining a visit to Congress right now.
And all of this spills into the private conversations that the president is having with the Israeli prime minister. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan told reporters this week, or suggested that this came up because he was asked about the Senate Majority Leader's comments. And one of the prime minister mentioned it to President Biden. And it comes at a critical time. The state of play right now is a ceasefire deal and also this looming invasion of Rafah. And so while that's being worked on in the White House, there's also, and aside, the growing rift between the two leaders aside, all of these politics are also spilling into those moments.
And the burning desire to get the hostages who are still, after almost 5 months, being held in Gaza, including six Americans. Thanks, everybody. Coming up, the Never Trump movement flopped in the GOP primary. Where does it go now as the presumptive nominee sets his sights on reclaiming the White House? Stay with us.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Never Trumpers tried and failed to prevent Donald Trump from becoming the Republican Party's presumptive nominee, but the movement is still very much alive. I'm joined now by one of the Never Trump leading voices, Republican strategist Sarah Longwell. She is the publisher of The Bulwark, host of the Focus Group podcast, and the executive director of the Republican Accountability Project. Sarah, you have a lot of jobs. Thank you so much for being here. I want to talk about your new campaign, Republican Voters Against Trump. You told Politico, quote, unlike other Never Trumpers, you are all in on Biden. So what are you going to do with this movement? How are you going to organize?
Yeah, so Republican Voters Against Trump is a campaign that we ran in 2020. In 2022, we ran a version of it. We had Republican voters against Carrie Lake and Republican voters against Herschel Walker. And our theory of the case is that the most persuasive tool for peeling off these sort of disaffected Republican voters, right-leaning independents, soft GOP voters, is to use real Republicans, real voters. And in 2024, everybody that's part of our campaign, Republican Voters Against Trump, has actually voted for Trump at least once. And they explain why they're not going to do it again. And the reasons vary. I mean, for a lot of them this time around, it's about January 6th. It's about Trump's lies about the election. It's about how dangerous they think he's going to be in 2024, the fact that, you know, he's something of a lunatic who will be surrounded by other lunatics. And the fact that he's in it for himself, that he's not in it for people, that it's about grievance. It's about staying out of jail. It's about raising money. And so, you know, the messengers, as people who voted for Trump in the past, they are more credible mm-hmm. to swing voters than, let's say, just about anybody else, certainly than Democrats. And a big piece of it psychologically is these are not people who are Democrats. And so it's uncomfortable mm-hmm. for them to vote for Joe Biden. And so you're not building really a pro-Joe Biden coalition like the Democrats might. You're trying to become part of the broader anti-Trump coalition. And so that's what we're trying to do here.
So, Sarah, I just want to give the exact quote that you gave to Politico. You said, a new Never Trumper is born every minute. And on that note, this week, we saw about 108,000 Republicans in Arizona, Republicans, vote for Nikki Haley, who, of course, is not even in the race. There is a prominent school of thought, though, that Republicans who aren't fans of Trump are going to put on their GOP jerseys in November and pull the lever for Trump. So how, you mentioned part of your strategy to have Republicans like yourself, maybe even more different kinds of Republicans, those who served with him in the White House, perhaps. Is that going to be enough in such a tribal country right now?
I think so. Look, the fact is you're talking about a very small margin of voters across six very important states. And these voters are the margin makers, the ones who they're constitutionally still Republicans, but they do not want to vote for Donald Trump. So much so, I mean, I was really struck by the nearly 20% of Republicans in Arizona, which mm-hmm. is a swing state, that went out to register their support yeah. for Nikki Haley and against Donald Trump when it didn't matter. She's not even on the ballot. And so to me, that demonstrates a sense of urgency from these voters about saying that they don't want Trump. And look, some of them are going to go home to the party. They always do. Some of them are already people who are voting for Democrats and who voted for Joe Biden before. But a key group of them are what we call the double doubters or the double haters or the a pox on both their housers, right? They don't like either of these people. But ultimately, you've got to get them to a place where they say they hold their nose and they vote for Joe Biden. And that's where our testimonials and our stories come in, because you got to give them a new tribe to belong to where they can maintain their Republican identity, but they don't have to support Trump. And that's what Republican Voters Against Trump is all about.
I mentioned John Kelly, who was the former president's chief of staff, Defense Secretary James Mattis. They've been very forceful in speaking out against Donald Trump. John Kelly told Jim Sciutto even that Trump has something positive to say about Hitler. He said, but Hitler did some good things. I said, well, what? And he said, well, Hitler rebuilt the economy, but what did he do with that rebuilt economy? He turned it against his own people and against the world. I said, sir, you can never say anything good about the guy, nothing. Is someone like him, John Kelly, a person who you can get into your new tribe, as you call it?
Yeah, I think so. Look, I think it is critically important that the country hear from the former Trump officials who are sounding the alarm about how unfit mm-hmm. Donald Trump is to serve. And I think there's some people. So John Kelly has made some striking comments, and it's incredibly notable that Donald Trump's own vice president who served with him is not going to endorse him this time. But we need to hear from Jim Mattis. We need to hear from so many of the cabinet officials that who they have maybe said something off the record, or maybe they've a quote here and there. They need to sound the alarm and explain to the country what they saw, why Donald Trump cannot return to office. And because we might think it doesn't matter to voters, but to this critical slice of voters who will make the margin, the decision in 2024, they can make a difference, I promise.
Sarah, we're almost out of time. I just want to ask you quickly about Chris Christie, who, of course, was in this race. I think you would count him as a never-Trumper at this point. He told David Axelrod, when asked whether Christie would potentially serve as a candidate for president on the No Labels ticket, he left the door open. He said he's looking at it, though he doesn't want the country to go through what I think will be the misery of a second term.
Yeah, if he doesn't want Donald Trump to be elected president again, he won't run as a third party candidate. Because like I said, you're building an anti-Trump coalition, not a pro-Joe Biden coalition. And anything that splits up the anti-Trump coalition and gives people kind of a third lane or an off-ramp, all that does is hurt Joe Biden and help Donald Trump. And I know Chris Christie does not want to be in the position of reelecting Donald Trump.
Sarah Longwell, thank you so much. Really appreciate it. Fascinating stuff.
Thank you.
And the games are already underway. President Biden is getting all in on March Madness fun. We'll show you his brackets and break them down after a quick break. President Biden has entered the March Madness chat. He's going with the pros and picking tournament favorite UConn to win the men's NCAA tournament, and North Carolina, Tennessee, and the University of Houston rounding out the Final Four. The games kicked off about an hour ago. 64 teams are hoping for their one shining moment. CNN's Coy Wire is here. Coy, good to see you. What do you make of the president's bracket?
Well, Dan, it is safe, or is it? He said, went with 3-1 seeds and two and a 2 seed to make to the Final Four. Of course, March Madness is so magical and fun to watch because there are always upsets and Cinderella overlooked teams almost every year making a run. So going with UConn to repeat as champs might seem like a safe pick because they are the overall favorites to win it all. But there have only been two repeat champs since 1974, Dana. I, too, have UConn repeating. I am doing it because Coach Hurley wears the same lucky underwear every game and washes them by hand. That's a mad scientist, in my opinion. How can you not pick a coach and team like that?
I'm a superstitious person, and I love that detail. That's fantastic. So the Inside Politics team was huddled over computers this morning looking at the brackets that were put out by the president. And we happened to notice that three teams in his Sweet 16 picks are from North Carolina. North Carolina, yes. The Tar Heel State, happens to be, at least the White House hopes, a battleground state. Is that what's going on here, wishful thinking? Or is it is it also like North Carolina has some really good basketball teams?
It could be. University of North Carolina, one seed. We also has NC State making the Sweet 16, who just upset UNC in the ACC tournament. He also has Duke in there, of course. Is he showing some love to the Tar Heel State to win over some voters for the election? Maybe. But they, as you mentioned, are also pretty darn good at basketball. Mm-hmm. If he were trying to win votes with his bracket, he'd want to focus on some of the swing states, no? So he has the University of Wisconsin only winning one game. But Marquette making it to the Elite Eight. He has the University of Arizona, a 2 seed, making it all the way to the Elite Eight. He has 10-seed Nevada pulling off an upset in the first round, but then losing to Arizona. So Michigan State only has them winning one game. University of Pennsylvania, not in it. But Duquesne, representing Pittsburgh, in it. But he has them losing. No schools from Georgia made the tournament, so there's no influential presidential picking there. So two schools out of swing states, Marquette and Arizona, making the Elite Eight, if that is what you're thinking, Dana.
Well, this is why we had you on, because we were just focused on North Carolina, and then you brought in all of these other key battleground states where the teams are playing. We, of course, have to talk about the women.
And yeah, girl.
Is it really striking? It's striking to me that Caitlin Clark in the president's bracket is losing in the Sweet 16 in Iowa. Is that actually possible?
See, I just got the goosebumps here because either this, he hasn't been watching hoops, he got really bad advice, or his auto pick button wasn't working correctly in the women's bracket. I'd love to hear a reason for this. Caitlin Clark is a megastar. She's the most well-known college basketball player in the country, women or men, one of the greatest of all time.
Yep.
And her Hawkeyes made it to the title game last year. So he does have South Carolina winning it all over UCLA in the final, but they have to get through Stanford, my Cardinal, in the Final Four to make it there. So we'll see if he's right. Hopefully not.
So good to see you, Coy. Thanks so much
for
breaking it down. Thank you for joining Inside Politics. CNN News Central starts after the break.
When you work next level. And when you play next level. And when it's time to sleep, Sleep Number smart beds are designed to embrace your uniqueness, providing you with high-quality sleep every night. Sleep next level. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, the Queen Sleep Number C4 smart bed is only $1,599. Save $300 for a limited time, only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com. Prices higher in Alaska and Hawaii.
You can now watch CNN's Five Things on Max. Each weekday, Kate Baldwin breaks down the five essential news stories in 5 minutes or less. She'll get you up to speed and on with your day. CNN's Five Things with Kate Baldwin, streaming weekdays exclusively on Max.